Hello and welcome to Parental Guidance something. Suggested.
Yes.
Yes, not Parental Guidance something. Suggested.
Though, I mean, at least the acronym would still work.
I know, it totally would. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
And this time we both saw...
That is technically not part of the title. It should be an obnoxiously long, like 18-word title. Did they write out the lyrics to the song that doesn't have any words? Yeah, just a whole dun, 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 dun.
I noticed toward the end, because the music is, you know, that music, and it was all very fast-paced, and there were a lot of bongos, so naturally, I could not pay attention to anything but the bongos. So I was air bongoing to Jenna, and Anna Grace was air bongoing to her dad, thinking like, why is anyone else doing it? It's like, I'm going, bongo, bongo.
Speaking of the music during it, like, was it me, or were there nods to Christopher Nolan's, like, Dark Knight score and the James Bond, like, when he's up on top of the building, and you hear the Mission Impossible riff, mm-hmm. like going through there, but you hear these horns come in, and they are distinctly like 60s era James Bond, like the wah, 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 mm-hmm. wah.
I did notice that. And, well, here, let's put it right up there. Mission Impossible.
Fallout.
Yeah, I was going to say.
With another, you're, just.
You're, never just mind what I was going to say. Mission Impossible Juggernaut.
That's, I mean, they're probably gonna do another one. There's no reason that can't be the title.
Yeah. Actually, in my mind, truly, I've been calling it Mission Impossible Skyfall because for some reason, Fallout and Skyfall.
Well, I mean, there's falls in both
skies.
Of them, and I mean, I guess both of them are about very unstoppable. Mm-hmm. Super agents.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it.
Anyway, it's a good movie. Go see it. Okay. That's the short version. It is entertaining.
It is that, yes.
And I just read something fascinating, and I truly, truly do believe this. Rotten Tomatoes, their website, they had the time. They haven't done this movie yet, but they went through every single Tom Cruise movie, and they figured he's running a 14-minute mile, and they counted.
How long
he has run.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
And then they made it into a video. It's like 18 minutes long.
They looped all the videos.
Yeah. And then here's the science. The more Tom Cruise runs in a movie, the more money it makes.
Did I not suggest to you that he needs to do some
yes.
based on a true story? Like, there is some athlete, an Olympic athlete that has done something like, I don't know which running competition, like I don't want to narrow it down. There is somebody that has done something that is worthy of turning into at least an hour and a half, 2 hour movie.
Easily.
And I understand that Tom Cruise is nearing 60. But like if you can de-age like Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart for X-Men 3
and
or
Kurt Russell.
Michael Douglas for
Kurt Russell was beautifully de-aged.
I'm just saying like any you can do that. You can do that for Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a movie that he does nothing but run, I mean, you're talking about Avatar numbers.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm sure his people are on it. And the thing about Tom Cruise running, as I have said on my show, it's like John Cusack in The Rain. First of all, you expect it. And second of all,
he looks
great.
Spectacular doing, like when he is running over those rooftops.
Oh, that's the best.
Like, I'm just sitting there going, this guy is like 55, 56. Holy cow. Like, I mean, he's just moving. He is like a gazelle.
Did it even run in Risky Business? Because in Risky Business, he was kind of like just, you know, a tool.
Now, he probably had to run up to get that sock slide on the hardwoods.
Oh, yeah.
You don't see him doing the run, but he had to.
But that guy,
in order to...
I don't see that guy. It's like, that guy became, you know, the running man.
Well, I mean, he didn't do an action film, like an out-and-out, like, action movie, I think until the first Mission Impossible. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you had, like, Top Gun, Days of Thunder, but I don't think of those as necessarily action movie. They're dramas that have...
Oh, wait a minute. The Days of Thunder? No.
Is that really an action movie, though?
I don't know.
It's Top Gun NASCAR.
Yes.
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 It's the identical plot to Top Gun, but in race cars.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, other than that, I can't think of one. I mean, he may have run with a briefcase a little in a Grisham movie, but you know.
I'm saying, like, the first out and out action, I think, was Mission Impossible.
Okay. So that, well, and to know that he does like 95% of his stunt work. I'm just watching it going, man, I am out of breath, and I'm not even a block.
And, like, it's not like he's doing most of this. I mean, some of it is on, like, a soundstage, or, mm-hmm. like, you're going to have augmented, you know, CGI, like, in the background. Like, maybe they add, like, a building here or there. But for the most part, he is doing this on set, like, on location, whatever. Like, when you see him, like, fall down from a helicopter, he's got some safety wires or something.
Oh, of course.
But that's Tom Cruise that you are seeing do that. Mm-hmm. Like,
and yeah, I've sat on a roof before, maybe walked slowly for a foot, but he's full tilt running.
Oh, yeah. Like running like Jason Voorhees is going to murder him running.
Yeah. It's just, I wish I didn't find him personally crazy.
I mean, if he ever did try to chase us down, I'm going to tell you this. He'd catch us.
Yeah.
I'd stop. Like, yeah. I wouldn't even run. I'd just be like, I've watched this man run in every Mission Impossible movie. I think he did it in The Firm.
Now, here's what I want to know. Was he just a natural runner, or did he have someone saying, okay, you've got to do the arms like this, otherwise you look stupid? I mean, because a lot of people, they look stupid when they run. I'm sorry, they do. I respect that you're running, but you look stupid. He doesn't.
I think it's because he's not halfway due. Like, he strikes me as an intense person. Like, I can't imagine that, like, let's say he goes to McDonald's one day. I can't imagine that
I want a Big Mac and another Big Mac.
Right there. And I want you all to know that you are doing an exceptional job. Hey, cheese guy over there.
Give me three.
Can I stop you for one? Like, I'm betting it's like a 15-minute, like, seminar with Tony Robbins, seeing him order at McDonald's. Like, I've never, like I said, I don't think this guy has chill.
No, and like, I just see the crazy behind his eyes, you know.
But, again,
I love
apparently crazy behind the eyes, that's why we're not good runners.
Ah!
We don't have crazy behind the eyes.
Okay, well, like, now I feel better about
you
myself.
You and I see that, and we're just like, I'm going to throw my feet up. Is there a recliner or, like, maybe a chair with some ergonomic, like, support? But no, that guy, he's like, there's a rooftop? How far is the jump? I can make a 16-foot jump. And we're just like, why do you know that?
Now, on which part did he break his ankle?
It was a building-to-building jump. Like, it's the one where he grabs.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, he has to pull himself back up, but it made it into the film. Because Kristen even, she goes, is this where he broke his foot? And I go, yeah. Yep. And that's the take they used.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was when they went to that shot, when they were down and shooting up as he was jumping over buildings. I thought that had to be the double. But for the, you saw his face when he hurt his ankle, so I don't know.
That is probably the best way to see if someone is doing their own stunt. Like, you can only kind of layer the face over, like, mm-hmm. CGI so well. Like, there's a scene in Jurassic Park, like, that they had to map over somebody's face because the stunt didn't go wrong, but, like, the stunt person looks up directly at the camera mm-hmm. because of the way they fell, and you can distinctly see that is not that person anymore. Mm-hmm. And after, like, I watch, like, let's say you've got a Blu-ray or a 4K or a DVD or whatever you've got. I watch all of that extra stuff. Like,
it
fascinates me. The commentaries, all of it. So, like, I see the Jurassic Park one, and They're just going through it's like the anatomy of a scene or something mm-hmm. like that. But the more that you look at that kind of stuff, because the casual film goer isn't, I don't think they really care or know.
Really?
But this is what I understand.
I guess.
I haven't been casual film goer since I was, I don't know, five, let's say. But the fact that, like, when you start looking at this stuff and just going, that is definitely him doing it. And, like, you can, when the wide shots, like, pan into, like, a close-up, mm-hmm. like, Cruise really, and again, I know he's nutty as a fruitcake, but, wow, like, he's just the commitment to the films that he makes. Like, I love watching Tom Cruise movies.
You know, if he ever wanted to be a cult leader, that, oh, man.
I'm
well, let me rephrase.
Yeah.
If he ever wanted to start his own cult.
There you go.
Then I can totally see why people would be sucked into the Kool-Aid there. It's like, and you're going to love it. It's going to be great for all of us. It's like, it will be,
it would
won't
be,
it?
It'd be like being on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm not a culty person either, but like, I can see this in my head with problem. Vividly. It is in 1080p in my head right now.
Tom Cruise starts his own cult. Okay.
I saw that headline, I don't think I'd even click on it. I'd just go, I'd nod my head slowly, and then I'd just continue scrolling.
Unlike the headline that I have to go back and click on, my spouse found it, and I believe it said something like, not Bigfoot fan fiction is a thing, but Bigfoot on Bigfoot action is a thing.
Oh, dear.
For people who, they like to read stories about Bigfoot and other big feet. Yeah. I don't know how to say it, but there's some headline,
Bigfoot's,
if you search it.
Bigfoot's. I know. Either way, I really would keep scrolling there. I'd just be like, nope. I don't even want to accidentally click on that.
No.
If the FBI ever has to raid my computer, I do not want that on the search history. Mm-hmm. They'll be like, all right, well, we see this here, Mr. Cravens, but Bigfoot on Bigfoot action, what's that about? And I'll be like, well, and they're like, you are under oath. Like, understand.
Jane told me.
I didn't look at the Bigfoot on Bigfoot.
Now.
It'd be like that scene in
Henderson
True Lies.
Henderson does Hollywood.
Like when they pull in, not Dennis Quaid, who was the one in True Lies?
Oh, Tom Arnold. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis and Tom Arnold.
And they pull, who is it that they is messing around with Jamie Lee Curtis though? He's the car salesman. I cannot think of his name right here.
Yeah, I don't know. Some other guy.
Anyway, that scene where like he comes clean without the, like they're not even torturing.
He's just the goofy guy.
Like, I have to lie to chicks to get them to be with me. That scene. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking of right now.
I can see that. So, if you would like to perhaps look at film a little differently, the way Adam and I do, I am so proud I've raised my children this way. I'm sure you're infecting yours as well, because mine cannot watch a film without the commentary. And you can tell that Cruise is doing so many of his own stunts because if he wasn't, he'd be wearing a helmet. And there are little tells like that. And he'd be wearing a helmet even when it's super close. And there are parts that's like, wow, he actually put his foot down. He knows how to ride a motorbike. Things like that. So,
well, like I was watching the, what was not Ghost Recon. What is the name of the movie right before
Ghostbusters?
This? Nope.
No, nope. Ghost Protocol.
Okay, it was Ghost Protocol and then Rogue Nation. Okay.
Okay.
I was listening to the commentaries on that, and like he starts kind of like breaking down like how all of this started and what goes into. He's like, I trained for a year and a half.
I believe it.
To do that. And I'm just like, that guy would absolutely do that. Like he took an hour. Like let's say that, you know, 40 years of your life. I'm like, he took 1/40th or more of his life learning to do what amounts to 3 minutes of screen. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that is commitment.
And I wonder how much gajillion dollars he got from it, because I commit for that too.
Well, I know that because he is also one of the producers.
Oh, yeah.
Like on it.
He's got back-end
money. And I believe
money.
The reason why he is always, besides the fact that the movies continue to make money, I believe he is one of the ones that owns the rights to the Mission Impossible franchise.
Oh,
like,
okay.
through, it was Cruz Wagner was the ones that bought it back when Paula Wagner was working with it. But now that he produces them by himself, I think he owns, so not only does he get paid up front for just being Tom Cruise, he's also a producer on it. So like he gets more points out of like the overall, like I guarantee you this guy has cleared $200 million, like $150, $200 million from the Mission Impossible movies. Easy.
Each one.
I don't know about each one, but like
over time,
he is, I'm saying like he is making some RDJ money off these movies.
Oh.
Name me another sequel he's done besides, what is it, the Jack Reacher? Which I will
do
bet
like
you,
Jack Reacher
I will
stuff.
Bet you he also owns a piece of that.
Now, here, because we actually have to talk about the movie. Sure, and we'll even talk about Hotel Transylvania 3 because we can. Anyway, for real this time, Adam actually saw it. So this is the point in our show where I wonder, except for Wendy, is anyone actually still with us? Because I'm totally invested.
I think it's kind of like an artisan bit of woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have a very specific hole that we will go down on a movie. And it's not for every, like, it's not Siskel and Ebert at the movies. Like, it's not this casual, like, thing that you can just pick up and understand. Like, at points, I'm sure they're sitting there going, are they speaking in Latin? I don't understand that. Like, was part of that in Klingon? Like, it, whomever is
we
vested,
hadn't mentioned Star Trek.
Whomever is vested now in this, like I guarantee you, it's fascinating for them. But much in the same way that, say, Deadpool was not made for my mother, like she just that's not her cup of tea.
And yet it is ours.
This is not a like the viewership for Friends. Mm-hmm. Like that was a show that seemed to encapsulate many a person's bit of attention in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think necessarily that is us.
Oh, but I know I loved Friends. Really, well, I did. Because I can go both ways. Star Trek,
but
Star
I'm
Wars.
Saying like Friends was popular because everybody can digest.
You're going
to
love this. So I remember watching the pilot with my spouse.
Right.
And he said, well, that was just okay, but this is going to be a huge hit. And I said, just okay. I found it mildly amusing, which I think is a step higher than just okay. And there were moments on Friends that Joey wearing the turkey on his head,
it's
comedy.
It is a fun show. I'm not disrespect. Like, I was of the Seinfeld camp.
Oh,
when that was on. But, like, the friends of mine that were definitely, like, much further into
90210.
Then that
didn't
watch
it. Didn't care.
It did not speak to me.
I knew it was a zip code, and that was it. So yeah. So the point is, we've seen it. We enjoyed it. I did think it ran a little long. I wanted to see. I guess this is my flaw. I wanted more quips. I didn't think it was as funny as it could have been. I felt like in Ghost Protocol, it was just a teeny bit funnier, you know?
Well, keep in mind that is also a different filmmaker as well. The thing that I have always kind of appreciated about these movies, and I think it's the reason why you can have a franchise that's, what, 22 years? Is that right?
The movie? 1996. Oh.
1996 would have been the first film in this franchise.
I was saying, wasn't it on in the 60s? But anyway.
The Tom Cruise starring Mission Impossible movies. It's 22 years in. Name me another film franchise that has maintained the same lead, a lot of the same actors, like that's went that long. And again, no reboots, no recasting. Like
Iron Man?
Well, 2008. I'm just you don't see a franchise keep the same people. And like Brian De Palma did the first one. John Woo did the second one, which I really think it's the redheaded stepchild of the mission. I hate the second one.
But the first one is hilarious because it is so hard to follow, and I find joy in that.
For a summer movie, I will agree, it was labyrinthine.
Yes.
But, like, the people I saw it with, because I saw it in the theater, and I would have been in 10th grade, I think. I see it in the theater, and they're all just like, that didn't make any sense. And, like, in the back of my head, I'm just like, you're all a bunch of idiots.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't say that. But for a summer film, like, because I think Independence Day also came out that summer, I believe. If not, it was, like, the summer before. Independence Day ain't hard to digest. I mean, that's a bologna sandwich with, like, off-brand mayonnaise. Like, it's, I mean, there's explosions, but, like, you're not curious.
Oh, say it.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah, I love that.
No.
That reminds me. We'll talk about this on our Binge or Cringe, but for Will Smith's 50th birthday in September, he has a TV show on YouTube, and you know what he's going to do in September? He's going to bungee jump into the Grand Canyon. Off of the Grand Canyon? Over the Grand Canyon?
I guess into it.
I don't know. And I would have to say, oh, hell no. Nah.
Especially not for my 50th birthday.
No. Anyway, I digress. So.
Okay, second one. Like, redheaded stepchild. Like, it's almost a parody of... It's like The Naked Gun, but instead of having Leslie Nielsen, like, people don't realize it's a parody because it stars Tom Cruise. But, like, he's taking, like, his bike up on one wheel, the front wheel, and he's just, I mean, he is just sniper-shotting. Like, there is no way that, I think they're at one point, like, they do a flying kick with motorcycles at the end.
Yeah.
Like, it's preposterous, and not in the way that the later movies are. It's just stupid. I hate that movie.
Like. I like watching the action sequences, and I could probably enjoy the first two movies with just, I just want to see the action sequences.
Like,
I've
watched other John Woo movies, like all of the doves and all this. Like, it's like every day he woke up, had some coffee, snorted a line of coke, and he's just like, oh,
Dove,
I'm gonna woo slow-mo. This thing.
Dove,
oh,
slow-mo.
I'm gonna woo it.
And it's, well, what I love about John Woo is he's so fun to parody.
Yes.
He
definitively is. The films as they are now, or really, I guess, what the...
I guess Rogue
your
Nation.
Your formula. I think J.J. Abrams is the one.
Oh,
that
yeah.
The you ground Ethan Hunt to a certain degree. Like, you personalize him. That's when you had Michelle Monaghan added as his then-wife.
Mm-hmm.
You add... I think Simon Pegg is added there.
Yes. And... I could have heard more Simon Peggisms.
Like, and to this day, he is still, J.J. Abrams is still producing those movies. I think you've almost got that situation with, like, all right, you have Mario Brothers, Mario Brothers 3, and Super Mario World. Mario World is probably the best of those three games. But you can't get there without the original Super Mario Brothers. And I think that's what Mission Impossible 3 is. That film is the one where kind of J.J. laid out and he goes, this is what these movies need to be. Because 1 and 2 are Tom Cruise movies. The Mission Impossible franchise now is an ensemble piece. Like, it's about the team.
It needs to be.
And like I said, 3 is the one where that happens. And I think you almost kind of perfect the formula that they use now in Ghost Protocol. Like, that is the quintessential Mission Impossible movie, or at least the way that the movies have been since, what was that, 2011?
And that one, well, that one still remains my favorite.
Done by Brad Bird, who also gave us Incredibles 2.
Yeah, well,
this year.
There you go.
Like I said, the three I don't think is the best, but I think it's the movie that owes really the franchise's longevity.
Which one has the scene everyone knows where Tom Cruise is lowered into the thing?
That's the first one. When he does, and he's like,
that's the first one.
He's completely like, he's almost hitting the floor. Like, you can't
really.
I'm doing that in the
studio. I know.
Studio
so
right
is
now.
Isaac.
You can't see me doing it, but I was pantomiming it.
The first one, because I rewatched it with the girls to try to. Okay, I wanted to mess with them. Just because it's so hard to follow. If you're just not paying attention, it's very easy to go, what? And I wanted them to see that scene in context, really, because that is a scene
when he's trying to get the
you'll
knock
see it over
list
and over
from the CIA, yeah. I think. Yeah.
And it is a great scene. But that's really all I remember from the movie other than the stupidity.
Well, it's, I mean, honestly, like, I would call that scene iconic. Like,
yes,
whenever,
absolutely.
Whenever, like, Cruise ends up killing himself on the set of one of the Mission Impossible movies, doing an insane stunt, and later that year they do the in memoriam, mm-hmm. like, yeah. for Tom Cruise, that scene will yeah. be, like, you're going to have the...
The Risky Business slide.
You'll have the scene in Jerry Maguire at the
yes,
very end.
You complete me.
Like, the you had me at. Yeah. Like, you'll see that in there. And, like, the scene from the first Mission Impossible is. And there'll be a lot of running in that,
yeah.
that montage.
You know, and I thought iconic when he was running across that rooftop. I thought this rivals that because it really sums up these movies and Tom Cruise, the running. And, he's the running man. He should remake The Running Man.
I'm surprised he hasn't.
I just don't understand.
He looks at that title and he's just like, running?
I should do this.
My God, why has no one brought this to my
and
attention?
And I really want him to remake Forrest Gump.
Or at least
just, Mama says, life is like a box of chocolates!
That would be... I'm gonna just tell you right now, fascinating.
Like,
I don't want to say it's a good idea, but my goodness, my eyes would be glued.
I want to see that.
That's
so much. I got you.
You were mentioning, I think, earlier about like the length of the film. Chris McQuarrie, who wrote and directed the last two of these, like, if you will go back through his filmography, this is exactly what a summer film, a summer, like, big budget blockbuster did. Usual Suspects, like, mm-hmm. I believe he wrote at least the first Jack Reacher. He directed that one, which, if I'm remembering, is his first, like, feature film directing job, which... Cruise, as often as he likes to use him, was probably in his head his tryout mm-hmm. for Mission Impossible. Wanted to see if he could do it like a smaller budget film. He also, I think, ghost wrote large parts before he got screen credit for Valkyrie. Like, Cruise loves this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have done a ton of stuff together. Not to mention, like, McQuarrie's just done an interesting amount of just film. If you haven't seen Usual Suspects, watch it. Like, and it kind of plays like a smaller budget version of what he's done. There's a lot of twists and turns and a lot of faking you out. And the great thing that this movie does, and it's not just like the narrative that they're faking you out with, the little tricks that you will use in a movie, like intensifying like the music, when they sell it to the audience, the reason why you're so surprised if you don't see it coming, or if you don't just stop and go, wait, that's not going to happen in this movie. He will also start trying to fool you with like the way the score is playing. Like maybe it's getting really tense, or maybe like it's getting really quiet, and you're sitting there going, because all of these tropes and different things that you always expect in a movie, like the oh hell nah mm-hmm. from like Will Smith, or like. You think Dwayne Johnson is definitely going to save the day.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You want to kind of play with your audience's perception, and that's what this film keeps doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like the I don't want to sell too much of the scene where Alec Baldwin is in there.
Yes.
And you have people just constantly, that scene just keeps turning on who you think has the advantage.
Mm-hmm. The girls and I had a lot to say during that scene.
It was like
a lot.
The boys that was at least one of them identified that was his favorite scene. He's like, you didn't know who had the upper hand. I was like, it was a brilliant. McQuarrie writes like people play chess, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's they're very deliberate in their moves, and if you don't pay attention to what he's doing, he'll usually like. Let you know what he's going to do if you're paying attention to it.
Now, I'm going to change this movie for you
okay.
with these two remarks.
Right.
Okay, one probably won't change it. I don't want to give anything away. This is kind of a mild twist, but there were two actresses that looked so much alike. When a picture is shown me, it's like, stand right there. What's that about? Oh, is that supposed to be someone else? So that happened. And the girls are like, what is... We had the two actresses looked so much alike to us. Was that on purpose? Was that to mess with us, or did a happenstance? Did you not find that the female leads looked so much alike?
If you will look at a lot of directors, they will cast women and men that have very similar. Like, go back and look at the kind of women like Tim Burton wants to cast.
And or how Hitchcock always had the cool blonde.
I'm saying, like, they almost like a particular, like, line on the face, mm-hmm. like a particular color of the hair. That doesn't surprise me that he would... I don't know if it's an intentional thread or a through line, but I noticed it as well, but a lot of directors, sometimes they will cast the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they will just... I think... In their head, they have that type of person. They're like, I want the person that looks like that. Well, you can't have Michelle Pfeiffer. We'll get then I need somebody that looks like mm-hmm. Michelle Pfeiffer. Like,
oh, yeah.
kind of like that.
Okay. Well, for us, a picture of someone was shown, and it's like, that's her, right? I don't know why this is coming up. So that was mildly confusing. But we got over it quickly. For me, my biggest distraction in the film was... One of the CIA guys,
right.
He kept saying his name over and over. What was his name? Walker?
Yeah.
Texas Ranger. Walker?
No,
okay.
That's no.
His name is Walker.
Nope, not Texas
okay.
Ranger.
So to me, and I knew it wasn't him, but every time they show Walker, I'm seeing Jake Johnson, who is Nick Miller on New Girl, and in Jurassic World, he's the guy with the computers who's wearing the Jurassic Park t-shirt. He's the sarcastic one.
When you see Henry Cavill in the movie, you think of Nick Miller?
No, I think of him, like, all buffed out and stuff. You know, like, maybe for a minute, I thought he Chris Pratted. And I thought, oh, I didn't know he was in. Like, I don't think that's him.
No, wait a minute. Henry Cavill is, like, 6'4". Like, I don't...
They both had, you know...
Beards?
Yeah. That's exactly where I was going. So, and so, as I thought that, my mind was rewriting it and having it, the Nick Miller character being Walker. It was a whole lot funnier.
The other week when we did Tag, Nick Miller was the mm-hmm. name I could not think of off the top of my head. But I'll tell you right now, that movie drastically changes if you replace Henry Cavill.
Really?
With Nick Miller.
Jake Johnson.
I'm just saying. It.
Yeah, well, for me, it was just distracting. And then I had to say several times, didn't he look like that guy? And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know?
You're just confusing me now.
Jurassic World, the guy, the funny one at the party. Anyway. So, yes, Mission Impossible. I'm going to say... Because there was a point where I thought, oh, why don't they just do something? That didn't last too long. And for me, I would say the last 45 minutes I enjoyed more than the beginning. And I think it's because it annoyed me that I didn't get to hear the music. So it hadn't started.
I'm curious if you felt any of this as well. And it especially when they're doing like the prisoner like exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Did this movie not feel a little bit like The Dark Knight to you?
Having only seen this, I know you're not going to believe this. I've only seen The Dark Knight once, though I know, and I thought it was brilliant. But I just haven't seen it again. So I cannot truthfully say.
I really feel like this, and I know I made reference to it earlier, like even parts of the score sound like The Dark Knight. If the director and producers
walks like a duck.
Did not like examine some of like Nolan's Batman movies
mm-hmm.
before this, like it, like, even the prisoner exchange, some of the musical cues, like putting your character out there and like throwing like personal things at having a character that just wants to destroy him from the inside. I don't know if it was a peripheral thing, if it was an intentional thing. I'd be like, I'm going to listen to the commentary,
yeah, of course,
whenever it comes out. But I would like to hear what they were thinking about while they were making this, because even with Rogue Nation, they would tell you parts and they're like, well, we were looking at like the Dirty Dozen here, or mm-hmm. we were intentionally trying to homage this moment in that film. Like, and it's just, it's McQuarrie and Tom Cruise just breaking down every scene in the movie going,
and see,
yeah, this
that's
is what
I love about movies.
Yeah.
I can love a movie for a story on the one hand. So when I was a kid and I saw Wizard of Oz, it was like, oh, you know, and it was, but I love it more knowing that I watch it and see the backstory. They chose this because, and so I try to provide that commentary to my children because I do think less of you as a conversationalist if you don't know the obscure trivia. Although I know no one else knows it. I know this, but I feel genuine joy noticing these things.
I have sitting on my shelf at home, without me having counted them, I'll guarantee you, 17 biographies on Steven Spielberg's that analyze all of his filmography.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff just, I want to know how you did it. Like, I want to know, like, how the magic trick is done. Like, I want to know what made you go with this writer. I want to understand, you know, this was the original way the scene was done, but because, like, we didn't have this option, we then had to go. I like hearing about alternate, like, casting decisions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love,
like,
those.
Okay, Mission Impossible 3 was initially supposed to come out or start shooting sometime around 2002, 2003. It was going to be, I think Scarlett Johansson was supposed to play the character that eventually went. You had all of this, like, alternate stuff, like with the film going, but the director who did he did A-Team and, well, I cannot think of his name right now. Something happened with him along the way and he decided to drop out of filming. Mm-hmm. So it pushes it back to 2006. Tom Cruise, like, was apparently a big fan of Alias. Had the director that was initially going to do it not have backed out, he would never have, like, started marathoning Alias.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have hired J.J. Abrams. J.J. Abrams doesn't eventually take over producing it. Like, stuff like that just fascinates me,
mm-hmm.
about film, just going, well, if you would have had, like, you know, this is the original actor we wanted, but we couldn't get him, so we ended up going, like, with it. I love hearing, yeah, about that stuff. Like, I want, you know, my stories within a story, or when I watch my favorite scene, I can tell you how they made the sandwich. Like, I can tell you where, like, the bread is from. Like, I just, it, that kind of stuff is what my mind just latches onto.
To us, a, yeah, movie is an onion.
It just, they're
not everybody like onion.
It's not a 2-hour experience
really
for me. If it's the right movie, it's a lifetime experience. Like, back,
yes,
to,
correct.
Back to the Future. It's my favorite movie that's ever made. Like, I have read every book that has been published about it. Like, Robert Zemeckis, I have also have, like, probably an equal amount of books about him,
mm-hmm.
at my house. I know about, like, Disney, Universal, like, nobody wanted that movie. Like, Disney didn't like the whole kind of odd thing where his mom is in love with him. They're like, that's a little, that's,
which
they were
hilarious.
Like, that's too much for us. But, like, you get to Universal, who had recently produced Animal House, and they're like, that it's too tame for, mm-hmm. us. Why don't you go talk to Disney about it? Like, nobody wanted this thing. And then Spielberg even offered to produce that for him. But Robert Zemeckis, who had Spielberg produce his last two movies, he goes, if I do that, he goes, no one in this town will think I can get a movie made without you. So he goes off, does Romancing the Stone with Michael Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a huge success. And then he comes back and he goes, listen, you were the one that believed in me. I want you on this movie so that when it's a success, you and I get to benefit from this, and I've at least proven to people I don't have to have you pulling the strings like behind there. Mm-hmm. Just like I said, stuff like that, or the fact that like Eric Stoltz was Marty McFly for several weeks mm-hmm. before they realized he's a great actor, but he's not funny. So you have Michael J. Fox like doing double time, working Family Ties during the days, mm-hmm. and Back to the Future for at least the first month or so of film. Like that stuff fascinates me.
Yeah, me too. And there are movies that I get endless joy watching. And for people who don't reread books or who don't rewatch movies and things, I don't understand. I'm now watching the entire season of 30 Rock for the fourth time, the whole thing, because I wanted the girls to learn timing. And now Jenna said, well, now I have to see it from the beginning. It's like, okay, blurg.
Like, you can't, every project will not be one that you can analyze and like just dissect over like a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get the right movie, like I said, you can have like there's at least five films that like I could pick up, watch, like and not to, I wouldn't be bored with it. Like I would
I
just
could write
be,
a thesis on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wish someone would ask me to do that. Will they give me some sort of degree? Will it help us be healthier and wealthier with this knowledge?
I'll tell you, I don't know that it would really change my life in any way, but I would like to be able to start this show calling us like Dr. Dr. Cravens and Dr. Ellen over here. Just DFA, of course, Doctor of Fine Arts. But still. It would be like, it would maybe give some kind of legitimacy, like,
yes, to our knowledge. We do have vast knowledge, but
like if you're and I'm not downgrading like neurosurgeons or like
no.
anybody saying that you don't deserve your title of doctor. You most certainly do. But I'm saying like I know a lot about film and I would just like somebody to recognize
yes, that's it.
My authority on these things.
Respect my authority.
That's all I'm saying. Maybe it's not doctor. Maybe you create a different title so it doesn't make doctors that are really doctors.
Look, you know, they made Bill Cosby a doctor and then undoctored him. They can make us a doctor.
Well, just give me his doctor.
You know,
he can't use it now.
I don't know. I'm not even going to.
It's like the honorary Oscars you get. Yeah. When they're like, listen, you've made great movies for 40 years, but you didn't win one. Here, you know what? Here you go.
Yeah.
Here you go.
You have a lot of knowledge about things that are useless in the real world. So we want to reward you for that, seeing as you're clearly not making a living at making these things you talk about.
But at the very least, you have a title now.
It's really all we ask.
Every
time I fill out a form.
You're a captain in as much as Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
Was a captain. He wasn't in the Navy. Like, he didn't earn the title. He didn't go up through the ranks. He had a boat, so he called himself captain.
Yes, I concur.
That's something along those lines.
We need to work on that. Anyway, quickly, seeing as last time we did a review of Hotel Transylvania 3 without having seen it, now that you have seen it, was our review too kind?
I think it was pretty much spot on. I understand the audience that this is made for, and the kids did enjoy it.
Really?
But
all of them?
I think maybe not all on the same level of enjoyment, but as a kids film, and Mason is the oldest at 12. I think he probably enjoyed it in as much as like he got refillable drink and popcorn.
Yeah.
And there was a movie I don't think it's one that whenever like he has his own kids that he will have to revisit like this film, just be like,
I remember
the day. This isn't that movie. Like, I think it was something they got to see at the theater. They got to eat popcorn. Like, it's not a memory.
It's the one where his kids are older and they're talking about Adam Sandler and they'll go, there was a third one of those?
Go, I think, yes.
They'll go, oh, yeah. There was. I saw
you know
it in
what
the theater.
I saw that in the theater.
And that'll be the next time he'll think of it.
And, like, there were some interesting tidbits in it, like, and the thing that really struck me, because I quit paying attention to the movie at one point, and I was sitting there thinking, like, this is based on Bram Stoker's Dracula. The film starts, like, several, or at least 100 or so years after the fight between, like, Van Helsing and Dracula that would have the original novel would have covered. And I don't know if Adam Sandler's character is supposed to be Dracula or his grandpa Vlad is that Dracula.
Well, that's Vlad the Impaler. Vlad the Impaler was not the Dracula in the Stoker novel.
Well, Bram Stoker's Dracula didn't have a grandfather that was a vampire either. That's why I'm saying, like, I don't know exactly.
Wait, is there a Nosferatu on this?
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I don't pay a lot of attention to these movies. Anyways, I was sitting there going, I would like to see their take on Bram Stoker's Dracula. Like, because Van Helsing is in this movie, which is what made me start thinking about it. Just going, like, okay, like the Francis Ford Coppola. Like,
he was in this?
No. But he did Bram Stoker's Dracula in, what, 92? Something like that?
Whoa.
I want them to cover that era of Dracula, but I want them to use the Hotel Transylvania characters in it.
Well, maybe that's because it's a TV show now on Netflix. So maybe, I don't ever plan to watch it, but
maybe they've already covered it.
Yeah, maybe they have.
And the reason, again, why I was also, Mel Brooks plays Vlad.
Which is worth it.
And I'm sitting there going, I remember what this guy did with Young Frankenstein. What if they let Mel Brooks do an animated Bram Stoker's Dracula? And obviously, like, you don't, like, lay into the darker elements of it. But wouldn't you watch that?
Oh, totally.
Mel Brooks starring as Dracula in, like, an animated, like, I was trying to find it. I was like, what would make you watch this? What would make it interesting for you? And I'm like, well, A, get rid of all this other stupid crap. Leave Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
Because Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, the original story, that interests me. And I mean, like, it probably never happens.
Probably.
But as a child, I also never thought I'd see a Spider-Man movie. And there's like six of those now.
See? And oddly enough, today I introduced some Mel Brooks to the children. Only the younger wouldn't come in the room because she was organizing pencils or something stupid. Mel Brooks. I realize you're listening to this at a different time, but for us, as we record this, it is the day before the first full day of school for our kids, and mine get anxious. So what did I do? High anxiety. I just played the Mel Brooks song and showed it to them.
I feel bad that sometimes I will reference movies and that will interest the kids, and then they just, like, I love the movie Blazing Saddles. Like, it's a film that could not be made today. There's no studio that would greenlight that. If you haven't seen Blazing Saddles and you're not offended easily, watch Blazing Saddles. It's Gene Wilder with Mel Brooks direct. It's just, it's.
Oh, he's going to do it.
It's sublime.
He's going to do it. Okay, anyway.
Oh, wow.
So yeah.
Do what he say. Do what he say.
Oh. So yeah, it was important to me, and I want to show them High Anxiety, the movie, but I want them to appreciate it. So I just haven't shown them Vertigo and some Hitchcock films because
you have to in order to understand the language of that film.
That's why I haven't shown them Young Frankenstein, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. I want them to see the original Frankenstein. I was going to say the original Young Frankenstein. Frankie. The original film. And I also want them to see Gods and Monsters, which I thought was fascinating. And that is Gandalf and George of the Jungle. Gandalf and George of the Jungle.
And Brendan
Fraser. And
there's a movie right there.
And it's about the making of it.
George of the Jungle.
There's a gnat in here. I want to kill it. But I'm not Renfield, so I just want to just think of me as Renfield
or
grabbing
Miyagi
at the bug. Anyway, so Hotel Transylvania 3, if you are 12 and under or maybe 8 and under, you'll probably get a lot of pleasure out of it.
If you are the parent Don't take any NyQuil before, because this film is going to make you drowsy.
Yeah. But I guess you'd say it's not essential see.
No. No. Like, I mean, even if this thing is on Netflix, like, watch something else on Netflix. Like, back in the day, like, I was the one that was watching, like, Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison, like, in theaters, back when Sandler didn't have an audience. Mm-hmm. Like, that Sandler, I enjoyed. But, like, I don't know, circa Big Daddy or somewhere around there, like, I was just, I guess when the mainstream, I liked it when he was my find.
Ah.
Like, but around the time, I guess, that everybody, like, around Waterboy or something like that, when everybody else is like, oh, this guy's funny, I'm like, no, this, what do you, listen, I've been here for a while. You listen here.
Little Nicky. Anyway, so. I'm Crazy Spoonhead Man. We're going to leave you with this. Mission Impossible is fun, and I think you should see it big.
Find the largest screen that you can. Mm-hmm. I saw it twice over the weekend, and I also ended up seeing it the second time in 3D. After I saw that helicopter chase and the motorcycle chase, I was sitting there just going, this has to look spectacular in 3D.
Did you get the A-list thing? Are you doing that?
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
So, we just only have the AMC theater here, and so you've got the A-list, so you get, what, three?
You can see up to three films a week. It's $19.99 a month, like, and with a, we went to see it on Thursday during the preview screening, mm-hmm. which would have been $10, and then I saw a 3D of it on Sunday, like, so that right there. That would have been the $20 like mm-hmm. that it took if you're adding it up like that. It's worth. I mean, I see these for like purpose. Like I have to cover them later in a podcast. But that's a good deal.
Even though you would see them anyway, but still,
true story.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, I was thinking that you had gotten it. So
well,
now
I mean, who doesn't?
There's no excuse for you to see Mamma Mia 2.
There's plenty of excuses for me not. I will use up my three movies in that week before I see.
You know what? Maybe we should see that one together.
I think that's the only way you're going to be certain that I showed up for it.
Okay, so have fun at the movies. What's coming up? The next one is Christopher Robin. Is that the next big one?
I think that's August 3rd. Maybe. Yeah. It's beginning of August.
So
yeah, fine,
what's
fine.
Coming out this weekend? Nothing. Obviously nothing of worth because I did not put it in my calendar. So it's nothing that I really wanted to see.
There's something coming out. I'm sure I will watch
something. Yes, certainly.
But yeah, okay. Find the biggest, large, like, go see this puppy on IMAX 3D. Like,
okay.
It's that type of movie. You and I have discussed there's some film, like Equalizer, was not mm-hmm. one that you necessarily needed to rush out, see it in a theater with, like, big, beautiful, like, surround sound. Like, Mission Impossible Fallout is the film. You want it to be a communal experience, mm-hmm. and you want to see this thing. Like, if they had a screen that you could see from space, like the Wall of China, see it on that screen.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much for listening. If you've been jogging the entire time, good for you.
You're probably dead.
good for you.
Because this has been a while. Like
we have a lot to say.
It wasn't jogging. It was probably a marathon. glad you got those 10 miles in. Way to go.
Great job. Proud of you. Keep it up.
I ran a 5K.
Anyway, we're going to do this again next week. This is Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.